The WBEN All Local. All Local. A daily look at what's happening in Buffalo, Western New York, and the world.
I'm Susan Rose.
I'm Brian Masurowski.
In Baltimore, six workers believed to be on the Francis Scott Key Bridge when it collapsed are now presumed to be dead. The iconic span failed early yesterday when a massive container ship crashed into a support beam. Divers are expected to begin recovery efforts as early as this morning. Jay O'Brien is in Baltimore near the scene of the collapse.
The temperature of the water on average today has been about 48 degrees. Hypothermia can set in those conditions in just about an hour. This bridge collapsed at 1:30 a.m. There was a period of those search and rescue efforts that were conducted in darkness in the aftermath of the collapse, and now we are entering into another period of darkness.
Well, it's not just the obvious, right, when it comes to the bridge collapse. It's also having an economic impact. The wreckage cutting off ship transit to the port of Baltimore. Big three automakers saying they're diverting shipments to other ports as needed. Elizabeth Schulze tells us Baltimore's port, one of the largest in the U.S.
$80 billion in commerce goes through this port every year. Just to put that into context, that translates to about $200 million every day. So what that means is that's revenue that's not coming through the port. There are 15,000 workers who rely on that port indirectly or directly for work. So this puts them in a state of uncertainty as we wait to see how long it's going to take, not just to clear the ship then, but of course, to rebuild the bridge and get that longer-term construction underway, too.
It's Elizabeth Schulze, some of the economic impacts of what we see in Baltimore. We'll be going live to Baltimore this morning at about 7 o'clock.
All right, WBEN News Time is 5:03. Schools here in Buffalo under the microscope. As the city's Council Education Committee gets more attention, are they setting the stage for more city involvement in schools? Here's WBEN's Tom Puckett.
The Buffalo Common Council Education Committee meets this morning, and Councilmember Joe Golombek believes concerns about violence in schools will be on the agenda. But what about having the city have more of a say in the schools? Golombek says that's not possible despite allocating funds to the district.
We can't dictate where that money would be spent. In that regard, it's exceptionally frustrating for us because we get the phone calls from residents when there are school issues and educational issues in the city of Buffalo, yet we literally have no jurisdiction over the Buffalo schools.
Buffalo teacher Mark Bruno says his concern is those who make decisions are not entering the schools to see what's going on for themselves.
If the county council is going to have a role, you know, do they know what's going on inside of schools? And you can't possibly know that unless you meet with the staff, the administrators, and the teachers in those buildings.
Bruno says the district has been downplaying reports of violence. Hear more online. Tom Puckett, WBEN.com News.
All right, Tom, thank you. Something we'll be diving into throughout the day here on WBEN. Well, Fisher-Price has laid off 75 to 100 workers at its headquarters in East Aurora, according to the Buffalo News. The move comes as Mattel has decided to move its preschool business to California. That includes brands like Barney, Thomas and Friends, The Train, and Imagine Next. In a statement, Mattel says it has no plans to move Fisher-Price headquarters from East Aurora. Some local employees have been offered roles in other areas of the company.
In the city of Tonawanda, they've made their final decision on Canal Fest during a special meeting last night. The resolution to support the festival passed, meaning it will be held as planned July 14th through the 21st. City of Tonawanda Mayor John White will be joining us to talk about that decision later this morning.
Right, good to hear. You know, it's all the controversies over. We'll be interested to hear, though, from the mayor a little bit later on. Are they going to be doing this every single
year?
Is it going to be, kind of year by year where you're not totally able to plan on Canal Fest? Well, how about this? Might be a lot of big changes coming, especially to smaller retailers near you. A new antitrust settlement would cap so-called swipe fees dictated by credit card companies and could lower operating costs for thousands of merchants across the U.S. Americans paid tens of billions of dollars in these fees in 2023 alone. The settlement that was reached yesterday with Visa and MasterCard will seek to save stores up to $30 billion over the next 5 years. Ron Shelvin of Cornerstone Advisors tells us merchants might choose to pass those savings along to customers.
They should make it easier to pay with a credit card, because what they will do now is probably not charge a surcharge on top of the price, but give discounts for those issuers and banks and networks that give them a better deal.
Okay, so these credit card fees, now a lot of times you'll see this is why places wouldn't accept a credit card, or you go to some stores and it's, oh, you have to spend $10 or more if you're going to use a credit card to make it worth it because they have to pay the swipe fee. Maybe that'll change. I'm not expecting prices to come down.
I doubt it. But we're such a cashless society, too, you know?
Kind of makes sense that you have to go this way.
Well, it's not just chocolate that could cost more this Easter.
For the second year in a row, egg prices are high in many parts of the world. They've come down from the soaring highs we saw last year at this time when the average price for a dozen was $4.21. This year, it's $2.99, still high when compared to the $1.59 a dozen in 2021. Avian flu is one of the issues driving prices up. It's affected millions of birds in this country alone, and inflation has put a squeeze on most farmers. And some are facing higher expenses as they go cage-free. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
A lot of people will be buying eggs for coloring, right?
Yeah. Isn't that, you know, we got to get some eggs in our house because, you know, the piece of paper isn't good enough. You got to color an egg for Easter.
Yes, you do.
It's the way it goes around Easter time. Eggs, one of those things, like milk. I don't even look at the price because I don't want to know. I'll just get mad when I look at the bill, you know, at the end of the day, the receipt and how much you pay, because milk, eggs, you know, bread, things like that, the staples.
Yeah, you need them.
It's not like you're not going to buy them.
It's like buying gas, right?
Absolutely. So, price of eggs going up. I'm sure a lot of people have noticed. How about this price going up? Jeez, this is our whole newscast. Just everyone being gouged left and right. The MTA in New York City holding its final vote today on enacting what would be the U.S.'s first large-scale congestion pricing system. The plan was approved back in 2019 by the state legislature. It would charge most drivers a once-a-day fee of at least $15 to drive through some of Manhattan's busiest streets. Danny Perlstein is a policy and communications director of the Riders Alliance. They're in favor of the plan.
For every one low-income worker who will pay the toll, 50 low-income workers in New York City depend on public transit. It is an overwhelmingly progressive policy.
Now, National Transport Workers Union head John Samuelson, among the plan's critics, he said it should coincide with a bigger commitment to improved mass transit service and should have an exemption for city employees who have to work inside the congestion zone. $15 just to ride on some streets.
The minimum.
Now, this was proposed under then-Governor Cuomo, who has come out now and said, oh, this is a terrible idea. Who would ever do this? He wrote an editorial just a few weeks ago. Just crazy things going on.
What are you getting for it? You know, the privilege to
drive in super busy traffic. I mean, do you think this will cut down on congestion? I don't know. I just can't picture New York City without a million cars in the street, Midtown Manhattan. It just wouldn't seem right.
The exclusive WBEN7 weather forecast calls for gradually clearing skies this afternoon with cooler highs in the upper 40s. Partly cloudy, turning chilly tonight. Overnight lows dropping off into the low 30s. Plenty of sunshine tomorrow with cool highs in the mid 40s. Partly sunny for Friday, staying cool with highs in the mid 40s. With the exclusive WBEN7 weather forecast, I'm meteorologist Mary Beth Roble.
Jessica Bauer Walker is a Buffalo parent and also president of the Buffalo Schools Parents and Student Community Health Worker Association. She's with us on the Trocare College Live Line this morning. A special focus of the Common Council's Education Committee will be happening later today, and it will be on fights and violence inside Buffalo schools. Teachers and parents have been pleading for change. Jessica, what is your level of concern with this right now?
Yeah, these are not new issues. You know, we kind of see these patterns repeating themselves, and certainly over the past couple of years seems to ebb and flow. So certainly concerned, want to make sure that our students and staff and everybody are healthy, safe, and supported in the school environment.
Now, you were speaking at one of these meetings at City Hall about on the issues of school suspensions and some of the different things that kind of go into that. This has become increasingly an issue in recent years that's really kind of divided a lot of people. You have a lot of teachers and others who say, well, we need to suspend kids who are acting out in school, not just for our safety, the safety of other kids, but just because they're disruptive to the learning environment if we have kids who are out of control. Then you have a growing group of people who are saying, well, suspensions don't solve any problem, and they're just putting kids further behind. And it seems like we're at this little bit of a stalemate where no one really knows what to do. How are you looking at this issue?
Yeah, well, we actually do know what to do because we've been doing this work for quite some time. We've done the research. We know from, you know, working with parents and students ourselves that suspension just doesn't work. So I think we need to come up with other solutions. We've been advocating as parents and students from a shift from using suspension as a primary intervention to using more restorative approaches that actually correct student behavior. This is not to say that some of the behaviors are not troubling, are not unacceptable, but sending a student home to basically fend for themselves, oftentimes with environments that are creating some of these behaviors and expecting them to come back and do better, especially when we're suspending students as young as 5 years old, we just know it's not working because these suspension numbers continue to be very high. The behaviors continue to persist. There's disparities related to students much more likely to be suspended if they're low income, if they have a disability, if they're Black. So we know this is just a practice that doesn't work and doesn't get to the root cause of behaviors. So let's find some other solutions that can create accountability, that can correct behavior, and make sure that families and students are safe and engaged so that we can move forward in a more positive way.
Jessica, we know that council member Zanetta Everhart also wants to change the suspension policy in schools. She wants more support systems for students. What do those support systems look like right now?
You know, so we actually run a peer-based program using parents and students who've been impacted by a lot of those issues. So we'll take a student who maybe has been suspended, try to understand the root cause of those behaviors, which a lot of time has to do with issues at home or they're really struggling in school. They might have an undiagnosed mental health issue. Try to address that and then have them in turn come back and use a restorative approach. See what they can do to be helping community. So if we come across a student who's suspended, instead of them just sitting at home, and oftentimes, you know, we're seeing more and more getting into more trouble in community, engaging in criminal activities, we try to give them positive outlets and ways that they can give back to community. So I know that Councilmember Everhart, that's one of the things she's proposed is if a student needs to be removed from the classroom for a period of time for some reason, how can we put them in a supportive environment where they can understand why they may have acted out. We can come up with appropriate solutions and interventions, and we can give them some positive outlets and help them to repair any harm that occurred in relation to their behavior, make sure that there's family supports in place. So this really is going to take all of us. We need to be talking to each other. I think a big missing piece has been talking directly with students and with youth because they have a really clear understanding of what's happening and what some of the solutions could be.
Yeah, on those solutions, you mentioned if a student has to be removed from the classroom. If there are people who are arguing against suspensions, including yourself, still kind of, you know, looking at, well, there are some students who do need to be removed from the classrooms that they're in, because, you know, people look at it as zero sum game where it's either suspension or you just keep them as is and whatever happens, happens. But yeah. I think you're kind of talking about a middle point here.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. You know, there's so much in between here, and I understand the level of frustration that teachers may have. I understand the challenges that parents have. You know, these are very challenging times. I live and I work with teenagers, and it's a lot. So we need to work together and come up with alternate solutions because, again, sometimes, I mean, especially a lot of these children who have disabilities, they're not getting the services that they're legally required to get. And some of their behaviors are related to a lack of supports and services that they're supposed to be getting. Sometimes there's all the time I'm intervening because there's just a misunderstanding, you know, between what a child is trying to express, because these are children. They're not fully developed. Their ability to express themselves can be limited, and an adult. And so if we can try to de-escalate situations, you know, all, the teachers can't do all of that, especially in Buffalo schools where the needs are very high, the classroom sizes are quite large, and there's a lot of issues. And so if we can build in some additional supports here, and there's lots of strategies out there from, you know, spaces where we can de-escalate and calm kids down if they need help, a restorative approach, dealing with root causes, having family meetings, understanding what's happening. There's a myriad of solutions here that we can propose and decide how can we work together. And some stuff is going to take longer, but there's some things that we could really do immediately, like saying, let's see what we can do to stop right now kindergarten through third grade suspensions. Why are we pulling kids that are this small out of school? And how do we start there, find some solutions, and then build and grow on that?
Buffalo schools operate really on their own. Do you think the city should have more involvement in how these schools are run?
I think we all need to work together. You know, right now, in terms of some of the things that we're seeing related to youth behavior and violence, we're seeing a lot of students who are getting suspended because they might be getting into a fight or an altercation outside of school. And so we're seeing that the city and Buffalo Public Schools are working together in situations like that. We've seen issues related to transportation and students being able to get to and from school. And again, NFTA and public transportation gets involved there. So if we can work together when there's a problem like that or to punish students, we should be able to work together to come up with solutions. So I do think, you know, our children are moving between the schools in the city and homes. And so it really does require Buffalo Public Schools, the city, families, the county, businesses, all of us need to be working together because this is our future.
Well, Jessica, appreciate the time this morning. Thank you. Jessica Bauer-Walker is president of the Parent and Student Community Health Worker Association. It's been speaking at some of these meetings, another one taking place this afternoon at 4:30.
That's the WBEN All Local. All new episodes are made available each weekday morning, produced by the award-winning WBEN Newsroom.